Support for Best of Belfast comes from listeners just like me who love Northern Ireland and believe we have a better story to tell. Massive thanks to all of you listening who have already joined the Producers Club, especially our Titanic producers, Barclays Eagle Labs, Ulster University, Young Enterprise Northern Ireland, Gavin Wall, Peter Dixon, and of course, the Ormobiles team. To find out more about how you can support independent ad-free media, get invitations to live podcasts and submit questions to our guests, please visit bestofbelfast.org. Thanks so much, and we really hope you enjoy today's show.
Okay, I don't know why this just popped into my head as an early memory, but it did, and it's weird. It's Norman Whiteside scoring in the FA Cup final in 1984 or 5 for Man United against Everton, and that made me a Man United fan.
For life.
No, until Norman Whiteside left, and then I hated them.
Oh, really?
I was a Norman Whiteside fan.
Wow. So, like, where were you when you watched that? Like, what was the room like? What TV was it?
I had just moved house and was in Saintfield in, like, a very old bungalow thing. And it was all very exciting because I just moved there. And it was kind of the first house I really remember, actually. And it was the first time I'd started to, get into football and be a boy and enjoy it. There were people around I never had before, and so I just kind of remember that as the start of kind of like family life more than anything else. And the start of growing up.
That's cool. So Saintfield was kind of the stomping grounds then?
That's where I spent most of my years growing up, in Saintfield. Yeah.
Cool. And like, what were you into other than football?
Oh, I was all sports. Like,
really?
Everything. Anything. Balls, running, jumping, everything. Like, loved it. Like, badminton, everything. Like, cricket, golf, hockey, football. But like,
nice.
All of it.
And if you had to pick one subject in school that you were most excited about, or were you just like, nah, not into school at all?
Primary school, not really. Like, I just, like, I found primary school quite like easy, and not in a way like the work was easy, just the experience was easy. And I think there's a bit of a small town feel to that. It was a really small primary school. Everyone knew everyone. And like the pressure was really low. It's very different than it is today, right? So like primary school is kind of fine, right? Like it's fun and mostly good memories.
Which is kind of what you want primary school to be.
100%. Love it.
Why is that a rare thing?
Oh man, I know. And in my peer group now, most of my friends, like all their kids are going through primary school. They're getting to that age where they're starting to have to do, and the pressure is ridiculous. Like it's just like, I could talk for a long time about that, but I'm not going to.
Awesome. So yeah, hello and welcome to Best of Belfast, the podcast that celebrates Northern Ireland and the incredible people in it. We've already been hearing today from Ian Brown, and I always like to jump in and do a couple of sentences of bio, I guess, just to set a bit of context before we keep going. And I've got a funny question lined up for after that. But Ian Brown is an entrepreneur. He's a fellow Ormobath resident, and he's also the COO of the Ignite Accelerator Program. He spent time in San Francisco. He's helped launch hundreds of startups and has experience building and selling his own. So Ian, I think today there's loads of things I want to cover. Part of today as well is, and part of a lot of these podcasts is, I'm just curious about you and I want to get to know a bit more about you because, you know, we've been in the Ormobath for who knows how many years. And like so many people in here, you sort of know what they do. You sort of know a wee bit about their story, but you don't really. And even though you see each other sometimes on a daily basis, you're like, I actually don't really know like what this guy's all about. I don't really know his story. And so I'm actually looking forward to getting to know you a bit more and finding out a bit more about your story as well. A very roundabout way of doing that, I suppose, is tell me about riding a horse in Cuba. And what the heck is going on with that?
I traveled a little bit when I was younger. And actually when I was at, I went to university in Scotland in Glasgow, and like during the summer a load of my friends had gone off to like go to Australia and New Zealand and do that tour. I was like, yeah, I want to do something different.
That's too mainstream.
So yeah, it would seem fine. You could do it anytime. So I was like, I think I should go to Cuba, right? So there were a couple of us went off to Cuba, and I was taking the train from Havana in the north of the island of Santiago in the south, and it's an overnight train, and like Cuba is like this obviously communist country, and the train is like this big Soviet bloc square Russian thing, right, that just like there were far too many people on. Exactly, yes. And so you get on and then you kind of go overnight down there, and halfway through the night, like I just heard this big explosion. We were kind of sleeping on there.
No.
And like, yeah, and like so, something, like basically the connection between two carriages had, something happened and exploded between the two. The carriages drifted apart. And like basically we were stuck in the middle of Cuba in a train, in the middle of nowhere near.
Yeah, I'm
right?
In for a penny, out for a pound here. This is great.
I can talk about this. I can talk about this for like half an hour if you want. And yeah, and then we like some locals were then there and they were like, oh, well, we'll take you to wherever you want to go. And like, brilliant. Like I didn't speak Spanish, but kind of hand signals, sure, waving, sure, sure, stuff, some words. And they brought some horses, and so we got on the horses, and they took us to the next town on horseback in the middle of Cuba.
Oh my!
And then, and I actually stayed in the town then for a few days before moving on, because it was great, like just totally a random experience.
And I mean, how long was this journey? Ballpark?
It was kind of 12 or 14 hours, something like that.
My goodness. Had you ever ridden a horse before?
I think maybe once.
Not professionally then?
No. It was fine. It was, you know, that was kept right. They were great. It was great fun.
So, I mean, what, aside from that, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but like what other than that experience was the highlight of that trip? Or maybe a takeaway from that trip? Because, yeah, Cuba's a really interesting place to go with that age.
Super interesting. And it was kind of, it's got a little bit more westernized.
Yeah, yeah.
But at that point, it really wasn't. And I obviously didn't have a lot of money. I was a student, so kind of just was kind of traveling around as cheaply as I could. And you end up staying with locals as well, so that they kind of run this side hustle there called the Casa Particulare, which basically could rent out rooms in their house. And I still remember to this day, there's a guy in Havana who I stayed with whose name was Dr. Jorge Ballesteros.
Class.
And he was a doctor. And had stopped being a doctor because he earned more renting his house out and he wasn't allowed to do both.
What?
And so he'd stopped that. And
he's like, I'm going to take this Airbnb full time,
like,
man.
Sort of, right. Pre Airbnb, all that stuff. And he was making like $10 a night, right?
Crazy.
And that was more money he was making as a doctor. And it was mad. So it was the experience itself was unreal. Like at that time, it was totally amazing. And like it is like 1950s America, all these cars. I guess I remember the smells, right? Because it's petrol everywhere, all that stuff, like really old school stuff. So it's really, really cool. All the buildings are kind of old, you know, gangster style Miami buildings. So really cool. Really good architecture. Super interesting place. Like I'd love to go back, actually.
Yeah,
love to go back now.
Cuba's been randomly on my radar the last few weeks. I've got really into chess over the last lockdown.
Oh, really?
And there's a really famous Cuban chess player called Jose Capablanca. And he's just one of these guys that just looked at a board and could just master the game instantly. That's the urban legend anyway. But, you know, I think of chess. I don't really think of Cuba as like a chess playing nation. No. But apparently at that time, or perhaps still today, I'm not sure, they're just really, really into it. So, yeah, it's amazing, all these different little parts of the world.
Totally recommend it.
Yeah. What did you study?
What did I study?
Yeah.
So I actually went to Queen's for a year before I went to Scotland and doing biomedical science. Didn't like it. Didn't like Queen's. Didn't like here. And it was nothing against Queen's. I actually just didn't like being in Northern Ireland at that time.
Sure.
And realised that too late. Because I honestly felt that when I was doing my A-levels and going on to university, I didn't feel ready to make decisions about life and stuff. So I just kind of drifted almost into it.
Belt.
And then as soon as I went there, I was like, this is such a mistake, right? Mm. And so the year later, I then transferred to Glasgow and did a degree in sports medicine, which was fairly pointless. but then went on, did a master's in IT after that.
Oh, interesting.
And started then went there straight into sort of mostly healthcare, kind of combining the two. Yeah, healthcare informatics was kind of what I went to afterwards.
Before we kind of keep going in the natural progression of that train, like any family experience of business, like any entrepreneurs in the family, any weird side hustles growing up, any weird IT experience?
Totally not. Like,
unreal.
Just like really nothing like that at all in my family. You know, my dad's a GP, which I can come back to in a second, actually. Uh-huh. But he was a GP, and my mum kind of brought up the three of us, a couple of sisters as well. But no one in my sort of family or extended family was particularly entrepreneurial or had any of that.
So you have the passion or at least interest in that medical world. You then have the IT factor on top of that. Where does that take you?
I guess it takes, it was a friend of mine, which is kind of weird. Like I seem to have got lucky, right, with opportunities. And I do think that's part of the university experience is where you build a network, right? Mm. And that was the most valuable thing. And that's the thing I took most from that sort of moving away, getting independence, building a network. That was the best thing for me. And like through that network, you know, someone who I knew well enough, but like respected what I was doing, I said, listen, there's this thing starting. Will you come and work with me a little bit? And at that point, I was like, sure.
Why not? Like,
yeah, I have no other plans. And I was working for Domino's Pizza, mm-hmm. like doing that stuff while trying to work out what it was going to do. You know, free pizza every night for me and my flatmates.
The legend comes home every night.
Such a good time.
Were you making or driving?
And I was driving.
Nice.
I was driving a... Ooh, I don't know.
And was that Scotland or?
Yeah, it was in Glasgow. Awesome. I was in Glasgow, awesome. And that's where I met.
That's great life experience in itself.
So good.
I love those jobs.
And I met my wife, my now wife, at that time as well. She also went to study in Glasgow. She's from just outside Dublin, and like she met me when I was a pizza delivery boy.
Yeah.
That's what she always says.
That's the origin story.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So. Yeah, so that Glasgow, and then so this was kind of I then went to work for a big pharma company, right? So MSD, Workshop and Dome, sort of going around various GP practices in Scotland and helping them with kind of clinical software. You know, it was kind of like a support guy, right? That's sure. basically it. Do you know? It's like, I'm not going to oversell it. That's what I was doing, right? Like, I probably should tell you this once.
Yeah, please do.
You're talking about entrepreneurial stuff.
Okay, like, and we're digging.
We hadn't, like, there was no history of that stuff. There was no, but actually, I live with some guys at uni, and one of them, I was going to say, like, bought the franchise, but just took the franchise, right, for something called a party bus.
Right.
And so we then, in Glasgow, kind of to, you know, pay for some stuff, we used to hire these double-decker buses,
right,
and then charge people, I don't know, a fiver or a tenner or something to get on the bus. We have music and people pouring drinks, and we used to bring them around like four or five pubs and into the nightclub in Glasgow. And like, you know, we were making, like, this was great. There
great
were like
money,
you know, 100 people going on this thing all the time. And so, you know, we didn't make any money. We just spent it all on stuff. But like, that was quite a funny, like, entrepreneurial experience early on. I'm pretty sure it was completely illegal. Like, you know.
Yeah, probably. But it's okay.
And then we had to stop it when someone broke their leg.
Ah, the jig is up.
Yeah. So there we go. Business venture number one. Yeah. But anyway. So then I was kind of working for MSD, and actually then they asked me to move down to London. And so I did, and I up sticks from Scotland and went down to London for a few years, which was great, and I enjoyed that. And that's what led me into then building a company. Mm. And that's where it started, because I was working some pretty good interest in technology stuff, building out big software systems for the NHS and to do with sort of GPs and payments. So I was still kind of in the healthcare space, and the person that I was doing this with, and there were two of us really did a lion's share of this, we built this big project for the NHS in Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland, I think, which was, you know, facilitating, you know, tens of millions of pounds worth of money. And really it was just the two of us that had done this, and we were like, what are we doing?
That is,
you know,
crazy.
I was like, why are we doing this for another company?
Yeah.
And I think it was only at that point that I understood the value of what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it then made me think about how we could capture more upside in that.
Absolutely.
And so the two of us bunked off work. We just bunked off work and went into Centre London, and we sat in the Ha Ha Bar in Charing Cross for about 12 hours, just trying to come up with ideas for stuff and see what we were going to do. And like, there might be a bit of revisionist history here, but I'm pretty sure it was the next day or the day after we both quit. Mm. And we're just like, right, we're going to do a thing.
Wow.
Didn't have a plan.
Sure.
But we're like, we feel we could do something.
So and was there a leading idea on the napkin or?
Oh, there were 20,
really?
30, 40 napkins. There was like, you know, with 10 ideas on each. And most of them were terrible, right? But we tried a few things and didn't, like a few early things just didn't get very far. And then, you know, then I wasn't working. So had no money. Yeah. I was like, well, what are we going to do?
Like, should I get a party bus again?
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of interesting. But, and then I actually moved back home and moved in with my folks for a while because I didn't have any money. Right?
Sure.
And so I was there, I was back at their house, I was kind of, you know, trying to work stuff out.
Did you internalize that as like, this is a positive stepping stone, or were you like defeated moving home?
No, I wasn't.
You were just like, ah, this is just next chapter.
It's fine. Like, nice. I think also as well, it kind of, we were, that I've been in London for a few years. and it was kind of like, I think I'm probably up for moving.
Yeah.
And we kind of highlighted a place we wanted to move to, and it was Belfast, Dublin, Glasgow, or Edinburgh.
Nice.
And we didn't have a strong preference for those. I think, if I was being honest at that time, Belfast was probably bottom of those four for me, because I'd kind of grown up here and it was like, but actually...
But the rent was good.
Well, there's definitely an element of that, right? When you've no money and where you can afford to live, there's a thing. And plus of all, our family was here. My wife's as well is in the south and I'm up here. So it was like kind of... Ireland was an obvious choice, really. And we ended up back in Belfast. And no, I didn't feel defeated. It was like, oh, that's fine. I'll do this for a while. But I didn't feel... set, like I'm going to be here for the next 20 years.
Yeah, you're like, it's a stepping stone.
But then what happened was we got back to Belfast and my wife got a job at Queen's, which didn't last, but she stayed there for a couple of years. And I then got into my business, right, and started, I said I'd come back to my dad being a GP, but that's actually kind of where my first company started was I was living at home and he said, listen, could you build me a website for the surgery?
No way.
Yeah, and I was like, absolutely not. And anyone that's in any sort of technical ability knows that you never do like IT support for your friends and family. It's a disaster,
ever.
Right?
Never, errands. Never.
You probably get the same, right? Yeah. And but then eventually, like, oh no, I'm gonna have to do this, right? So I did.
He is my father, I suppose.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I'm not paying rent, and it's like, you know,
yeah, the leverage is quite strong.
So I started to build this, and with my partner, and we were kind of doing this. We're like, yeah, we could probably build a website or two. Maybe we could actually, you know, have money to pay for things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like rent or a mortgage or something. And that's kind of where kind of the idea came from, because we looked at this and we're like, well, hang on a minute. There's an opportunity here, mm-hmm. because yes, there's one that my dad wanted one, but actually, hang on a minute. There's how many of these people are there? So then that's when like I kind of started into researching the market and digging into the problems and all that stuff, and realized the opportunity was there and the timing was perfect. Mm-hmm. And timing plays a big part in success, right? Not just luck, but timing. And we were just absolutely in the right place at the right time for that, and took advantage of it. To be fair, like, so, sure. we then built it out, and that's where we went from zero, and like it just started to get more and more and more and more, and we grew that company from sort of that point from zero to maybe, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 customers, 20 wow. million users, and yeah, and then sold it to a big US firm.
The dream.
And yeah, and there's like a bunch of stuff you can unpick in there if you want to, sure, and ask yeah. questions, but that's kind of the start of that stuff, and then, you know, obviously on the back of that, I've done some other things as well. But yeah. that's how I ended up back in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. Didn't stay here for all that time. Like, I came back here, but then actually went back to Scotland for a little while, and then came back here again in the middle of that stuff. But have predominantly been back in Northern Ireland for the last 10, 15 years now.
So, yeah, let's unpack that a little bit. So, you know, you start off making websites.
Yep.
Then what did that turn into?
So... yeah, it started off doing a website, right? Yeah. And then we're like, okay, we better do more than one and two and three.
Yeah,
and then we actually built this like big scalable system behind it, right? So there's kind of this, you know, I'll not bore you with the technical details of it all, but like a content management system that allowed people to update their own sites, right? So it's like
nice.
we built this thing that then gave ownership to other people, mm-hmm. and they controlled their content, right? And there was and that kind of grew, and then we added on like a patient side of stuff. So if you want to order a prescription or like, you know, book an appointment or do all of that stuff, like kind of we were the first people to kind of do that and built this whole system out for across the UK and a bit of Ireland as well. So that was really, really good. And like just an interesting point in that is like how hard it was at the start, right? It's really hard. Like building something's really hard. Getting customers is really hard. And like I say this to some of the Propel teams when or the Ignite teams when I'm talking about them, when I'm talking about how to do this stuff, is like really understanding the customer is the bit that kind of gets you going. And we were banging our heads against the sort of wall at the early days and how do you do this stuff. And like then you get into who the customer is and how they live this stuff. Mm. And they're not technical people who are working in doctor surgeries all the time. Like they're good and they're competent and they're professional, sure, yeah. But like they're not like super technical, so a website will tend to scare them. So kind of we understood that actually what they knew how to do is use Word, Office, Microsoft Office, yeah. Right? So we built the back end of the website to look exactly like Word.
Brilliant.
And as soon as that happened, they were like, oh, we know how to do this.
Wow.
And then they tell their friends, and then they tell their friends. And like all of a sudden, They knew how to do it. They got ownership and they could do stuff, right? So they edited the content themselves, wow, in Word. They like pressed save. They turned everything pink. They added student pictures. They added,
Word
everything.
Art.
Like
clip art was there.
All the exact stuff that is like horrible and makes stuff look dreadful. And we ended up with these thousands
if
of like
GIF was the GIFs would be there.
But we ended up with these kind of thousands of like awful looking websites, right? Because people like. But that was the key to unlocking it. Right?
Wow!
So it's quite interesting.
That's really nice because that sets a nice bit of context, and now I understand some of the other things that you've gone on to do. So I guess what happened next?
So I kind of like after we built it up, then kind of a big US company came in and you know, asked if we'd be open to selling the company. And you know, of course we said no a few times, right? until we said yes. But in reality, kind of like I had a, like it was just me and my co-founder. There was only two of us who were kind of employed by the business and We kind of contracted out a bunch of other stuff. But the people that worked with us were great. Like who we give the work to, they were super and like really helped us. And like, you know, I'm still friends with all these guys today. But they, like once we kind of decided what are we going to do with the company, because there's a finite market, mm-hmm, for what we were doing. Yeah. And so either we both wanted to do something else, but also like, pretty intense relationship with the founder, and like I think probably by the end of it we were both quite happy to say, yeah, do you know what, this has been brilliant,
absolutely,
but you know, let's take a break from each other.
Totally. I mean, it's so left field, but I was reading about Macklemore and Ryan Lewis this morning in On the Buzz, and they like they produced music together for like 9 days and they recently, you know, went their own ways, and they're just like, yeah, like we still like each other, but we work with each other every day for 9 years, like you need a break.
Yeah, totally, yeah. 100%. And so, yeah, Neil, who was my partner at the time, so we were both like, yeah, okay, this is like, it's a really good outcome for both of us. It's been fantastic, but like, I think it's the right time to sell. Mm-hmm. Plus the market opportunity for it, I felt, was finite, right? Yeah. So we would have had to do something else anyway. So it was a good time to sell around, and we did. And then we spent a bit of time, you know, obviously when you sell a company, you're kind of tied in with the acquirer for a period of time. So I was tied in for a little while. I actually stayed for quite a long time, longer, because I was quite enjoying it. Nice. And because we were one of the first companies they acquired in the space, and they wanted to acquire a bunch more. So I then got involved in the kind of acquisitions building stuff together. And
good learnings as well.
I learned a lot of stuff in that period of time, so I stayed. And then like once we kind of put together 10, 12 companies, and the European headquarters is actually in Leeds, so I spent a lot of time going back and forward to England, and they kind of asked me if I would like to kind of run the thing, but at that point I said no, I don't want to. I was ready for, you know, I just need a break, right?
Absolutely.
So I did that.
So what does taking a break look like? How did you fill up the tank?
I did an MBA.
You're desperate.
The business I built was fully remote, right? So we had no, so I kind of then was like, oh man, need to do something. And so I did an MBA, but I wanted the classroom experience. I wanted like that. So I actually did it here. I did it at University of Ulster.
Awesome.
And again, great fun. But it was quite an interesting experience because obviously I'd been through like a business cycle, right? Mm-hmm. From start to acquisition, kind of interesting. And then I went back to do the MBA, which kind of effectively put some theory in the practice, right?
Yeah.
So I spent most of the time arguing with the lecturers and my classmates and stuff. So, but in a good way, right?
Yeah,
so we had a great, a pretty good experience, right?
Yeah,
like in a fun way. And I'm glad I did it that way around. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah, because you're reading the textbooks and you can just put a wee note. Oh, yeah, that's like that time whenever X, Y, and Z happened.
Yeah, sort of. Or like, this is what the theory says. This is actually what happens in practice. Like, it often doesn't marry up. But I learned a lot about stuff that I had never even thought about before, which you just kind of do in practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, yeah, that does make sense now. Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
So, you know, you recharge. You know, there's always that inevitable then, I don't know if you could describe it as an itchiness, but, you know, did you then have that sort of desire to, yeah, I'm ready to do something again?
I always have that desire now. I think kind of, you said there's no history of entrepreneurship earlier on in my family, and that's true. But I think once you've done it once, then you're like, oh, okay. Like, you can actually, you genuinely can create something from nothing. Mm-hmm. And when you know that that's possible, it never goes away again.
Yeah.
So, like, I think about that all the time. Mm-hmm. But, and you know, just thinking of the way in today, I'm like, yeah, what about, yeah, I've got that idea for a thing. It's like, should I, you know? All the time, right?
Sure, yeah.
But, and you know, in my kind of, you know, day job now, it's like I'm exposed to that, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's quite infectious, right? So it's like kind of you're always thinking. But it's also a problem-solving mindset thing.
Yeah.
For me, it's less than a business thing. It's like, oh, you can kind of just work out the logic of how things can be better or how you can do something. And it's like, and that can often lead to new businesses and new ideas. So, yes, I always have the itch to do more things.
That's cool. So, I mean, fly us through, like, give us, like, the bullet point level, and this is hard, but, like, give us, like, the bullet point level of, like, what has led you to this building and your current role today. I know that's a lot to go.
But it's actually not that big a leap from where we were because, like, as part of my MBA, you have to write, like, this management project thing at the end, and I wrote mine about, like, regional startup ecosystems because I kind of felt that Belfast was a little bit behind other places and there was no reason for it to be. And so I got quite interested in it. I started reading quite a lot about it. And so I did my, like, and then I found out that Ignite were, like, had just said they were going to announce and run a thing here in the Omo Baz, going on an accelerator program and that sort of stuff. I was like, oh, that's quite interesting. So I just sent my MBA project to Tristan, who's the CEO of Ignite. And basically Tristan was like, listen, would you just come in and help us out? and so I did. And it started off with Chris, who's the MD of the program in Belfast now, Chris McClelland. Both of us just started off as what's called EIR, so Entrepreneur in Residence, which is just like we get to spend time with the teams and like help them with stuff. So use our experience of the many, many things we've done wrong to kind of help the teams avoid some of the pitfalls and hopefully, you know, help them be a bit more successful. And so that ER stuff's great. And all I did was like, I was thinking, this is going to be great. Like, just a day a week. I'm just going to have plenty of time to do other stuff. And it started like that. And then I just got sort of further and further and further in, you know, and kind of 3 years later, I'm like, no, CEO of Ignite. I'm like, oh my God, how did that happen? But it's like, I'm in a very fortunate position where I can choose what I want to do, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, you can't help but like this stuff because I'm working with, I don't know, 20, 30 teams, you know, 40, 50 entrepreneurs every year who have different ideas. I'm, like, constantly going from, like, learning about, you know, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, healthcare, tech to something. You know, it's like, to like, oh, right, it's a direct-to-consumer, you know, influencer-driven branding. And I'm like, so you're a lot of context switching, all leaping from one thing to the other, but you're learning all the time.
Absolutely.
So as much as you're helping, hopefully, like, you're learning. And it's so that part was great fun.
I always joke with people, you know, it's like in a job like yours, your general trivia is just going to be insane. Like, you know, fast forward a few years and I'm like, if we can't go on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and win, I will be very disappointed.
Well, yeah, I think you know a lot of useless stuff, like actually useless stuff. I don't know. There's something interesting around that generalist v specialist thing. But
yeah, there is. There's a book that's sitting.
Range.
Yeah, that's it.
It's great.
Is it good?
Really good.
Well, then I'm definitely going to pick it up.
Really good. Even just for the first chapter, where they draw a comparison between Tiger Woods and Roger Federer growing up. Very different focuses.
Yeah.
One focused on very narrow,
deep,
and the other one total wide.
Yeah, polymath, you could say almost.
So it's quite interesting.
Very cool. So, I mean, let's break down, like, for people listening who maybe aren't familiar, like, what actually is Ignite and what do you do?
That's a good question. So I am... So my gran passed away recently, so 2 weeks ago. She was 103, right? And like she, I tried to explain to her what I do, right? And she was like, do you know, you were doing better in the civil service.
It's the granny test is very hard to pass.
It's so hard, right? You'd fail it, right?
Yeah, I feel it. I know what you mean. You do what for a living?
Exactly,
no,
yeah.
You should work for the council.
Yes, 100%. So, like, what do? We just help entrepreneurs succeed. At the core, that's what we want to do, right? And we want to kind of, we want to make everyone's sort of, everyone's pursuit of what they're doing just a little bit better, a little bit easier, but also to help people here compete on a global stage, not just like a local stage, right? And Ignite's been going a long time. Like it's been 9 or 10 years now in total, and it started in the northeast of England, basically running like very traditional accelerator programs. So like accelerator programs themselves have been around for, it must be 15 years now, right? Since it was pioneered by Y Combinator, I guess, and Techstars in the early days, and they're both still going pretty strong. And that's just like taking a bunch of talented founders, like tearing them apart, putting them back together again and getting them into sort of commercial shape. And that can be for like raising capital, but it can also be for like going out and just like bootstrapping, you know, using revenue as growth. But it's about ambition, right? So we kind of just want to underpin a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's kind of moved. So kind of Ignite's done programs, I think maybe over 250, nearly 300 companies have been through Ignite over the time, over the last 10 years, and like they've maybe raised over 100 million sort of in early stage venture capital, millions in revenue, kind of acquisitions, and that like kind of good, like very, very good. It's got a good reputation as a program. And, you know, when Ignite moved here, and one of the reasons that I kind of got involved with it was I really liked the ethos of the company. I like the ambition, I like the team, you know, and it's very inclusive. And so I really, really enjoyed that. So, like, But coming here, it's like what we wanted to do, like particularly me, Chris, who's MD here, Tristan, Kate and Victoria, kind of five of us involved, we're like, okay, we actually believe there's something quite unique about the startup ecosystem in Northern Ireland. And it, like when you compare it to programs that we run elsewhere, you can absolutely see that. Mm. So it takes time. The feedback loops on this are quite long. So like when you start to do something with someone who's just got an idea or just like got a little team or they just built a product or stuff, like you don't see the impact of what you've done for maybe 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And so you don't know if you're right. You're taking a bet on it a little bit, but it feels like there's now something working here. Mm-hmm. The companies that we're seeing are better. The entrepreneurs are better skilled. I don't mean better qualified, I mean better skilled, right? So kind of, this is not about like academic stuff. This is just like they know how to approach stuff properly. And, you know, we in the first year, I think probably there were maybe, you know, we run two programs. So one is a pre-accelerator, right? So it's kind of, it's called Propel, and it's for early stage companies. And we take people who have basically ideas, right?
Yeah.
And maybe they've got a little bit of a product build, maybe some stuff, but nothing really, not much traction or anything.
Yeah, the step beyond the napkin.
Yes, exactly. That sort of step. And we help them. For 6 months, they come in here and we work with that. Yeah. And we're running those at the minute.
And they get some money. They get desk space.
Like, honestly, Invest and I.
It's crazy.
It's brilliant.
It's an amazing opportunity.
Right. Invest and I are like behind this, right? So they were like, okay, we need to do something like this in the local ecosystem. They put it out and that's how Ignite came here. Ignite won the tender to run that thing. But like having been around the rest of the UK, like this is something that everyone should do.
Yeah.
Right. It's amazing. That Invest and I say, here, we will give you some money to take a chance on your idea. Mm-hmm. That's effectively what it is.
Absolutely.
Like, and that gives people the safety net. Mm-hmm. Like, which is, you can argue is good and bad. I think it's a very good thing. They can quit their jobs. They can now start to think, okay, like I could actually take 6 months. There's going to be some money coming in. I can pay for food and things.
Yeah.
But I can then just go and work on this idea and see if it's going to be viable. And that is amazing, right? And that should be, like, in the greater scheme of things, that is not a lot of money to a government or a council or a region or whatever. And it's like, I can't understand why there's not everywhere.
Absolutely.
Because, like, the output of that we're seeing is really high.
Yeah.
Right? Really high.
And the way I think about it as well is, like, you know, you could get obsessed as, well, how many of those companies, like, went on and did this? Or how many companies went on? How many of those companies failed? And I think, like, the bigger picture is as well, like, you know, I was on your website and just flicking through some stuff and I saw Ryan Scullion, who... for a good friend of mine, he's gone through the program. And his quote was just so simple and beautiful. He says, you know, I learned more doing this program in 3 or 4 months than I did in 3 or 4 years of university. And it's like, so the amount of money that we are investing in these entrepreneurs, like even if their first business isn't the slam dunk,
yep,
it's the rest of their life, the skills and the mindset that they're going to have to go on and do loads of different things. Like the return on investment is huge.
Massive. I think you probably shouldn't measure it in numbers. Yeah. I mean, if you do, it's still great. Right?
Sure.
But I think, like you asked me some books that I was kind of thinking about reading and stuff. I'm reading one called by Donnell M. Meadows, which is about systems theory and like how to intervene in a system to make it better. And like those kind of metric-driven stuff are generally the worst way to intervene in a system, right? Yeah. When you think about that stuff. But the best way to deal with it, to sort of intervene and improve and change a system is to do it at a cultural level.
Mm.
And I think that's really what we focus on, is like changing the culture of entrepreneurship. So maybe 2 or 3 years ago, like, there was still a little bit of inward looking from sort of founders here. And like, I think the best thing that I've seen is that now people are starting to think about like their first customer is not, oh, Jimmy, down the road, Jimmy is now. It's like, okay, we've actually got to price our stuff in dollars and our first customers are going to be in the US.
Absolutely.
And we've got to just get out of this mindset here, because you can't build a scalable company in Northern, or you can't build a scalable company based on a customer base in Northern Ireland. You've got to be global. You can't even do it like on the UK. It's like you've got to have a global mindset from the start. And I think that's something that we really, really push, is like a global mindset from the start. And we've seen real, real improvements in how people build businesses now. And I think, like, back to what you're saying, like you can't judge the metrics, but I think like the metrics are a good trend of what's happening. And at the minute, it's all trending up and to the right.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like on that kind of note of trends, like you said that you guys feel like the Northern Irish ecosystem is unique in comparison to other places around the world. Unpack that for me. Like, what differences do you see here in comparison to, say, even anywhere else?
So I can actually give you a very concrete metric-driven example.
Give me the metric. I'm so ready.
I can't actually give you the exact number, but if we're running a program like this in the northeast of England, which we were a few years ago, which is almost identical to Propel. Like, kind of, there's 20 teams. Kind of, they're going to get some money, all that sort of stuff. But it was really hard to get 20 teams.
Seriously?
Yeah, really hard.
Versus how many guys did you apply?
So this year we had almost 900 people for 20 places that reached out. And like, so that's what I mean. It's like there's this demand that's kind of there.
Wow.
And I'm not saying there were 900 good ideas, but like just the fact that there were 900 people who were like, oh, I've got a thing that I could do. You know, it's like that's, I love that. You know, it's like it's amazing. The worst thing is like saying no to, you know.
Yeah.
So there's I feel bad about that, because like I'm not saying that, like, you know, because we have to like go through all of that. Look at all this stuff, and it's like, and you want to help them all.
Sure.
And just, there's just not enough hours in the day, right? So,
if we start to move into the less metric-y territory,
then,
like, what theory have you come up with to why there's 900 here? Like, why is there such a hunger or a ambition, should we say, here?
That's an interesting question. I think the honest answer is I don't know.
Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it?
It's really interesting. And I find, like, when I'm traveling around the UK, I think, and obviously I lived in Glasgow for a while, I find a lot of similarities in old port cities. Mm. So like kind of Belfast, Glasgow, Liverpool.
Yeah,
found people like that. The northeast as well is a little bit like that in England. And so I kind of find the people there they're very real and they're very creative.
Yeah.
And I think that creativity is the thing that really drives it through.
Mm.
I think here we're maybe just not as afraid of expressing it a little bit more. I don't know if that's true or not. I've nothing to back this up, right? But I'm just like thinking about it.
The crystal ball territory.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is. I do feel there's kind of a parochial sort of backstory here in Northern Ireland that might lend itself more to that kind of, it's smaller and you're more likely to, you know, do something, barter, help, you know, that sort of years ago. That's coming through here, that there's a bit more sort of commercial sort of nuance at that stage. I don't know. I don't know is the answer to that stuff, but I think it should be encouraged.
Yeah. Let me spin this theory out for you and feel free to vehemently disagree or, you know, at least chew on it. I heard someone say recently, and I don't know who it said, it's probably my mate, let's just say. We were talking about Simon Wise, that says it all. Simon Sinek, start with why.
Mm.
And he put forward the suggestion that he sees a lot more purpose-driven businesses or mission-driven businesses or why-driven companies in Northern Ireland than other parts of the UK or other parts of the world. Like, do you think, like, based on some of the guys that come through here, there is that not only a desire to be a massive commercial success, but also do something quote-unquote good for society at the same time?
I definitely see that. I don't know if it's better or worse here than it is anywhere else.
Yeah.
I think you're always going to have that kind of social impact, mission-driven entrepreneur. I say it all the time, but I don't know if that's better.
Yeah, how can you? I'm asking impossible questions.
Not like, you know. But I do see it. And like, there's no... there's also no sort of way to know if those are going to be more or less successful either. It's like, and I think that's kind of one of the things where I want to focus on as well. And what we are thinking about now is, like, how do we actually take that mass of people that want to do stuff and make the outcomes better for them all? And that's really what we do, right? So it's like kind of like that Propel stage that I talk about is really like that's key. Mm-hmm. But then the next bit, which is kind of the second program, which is like it's a pure accelerator, and that's just about growth, right?
Yeah.
Like that's literally you've worked something out, you've got a product, you've got a few customers, you haven't worked everything out, but it's kind of you think you're onto a thing, and we want to take it from, you know, from A to 1,000 A. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? And I think like there's a kind of progression there we've got to focus on. And very much that is now about raising external capital, because it has to be, right? Because you need money for growth, right? Or you need resources for growth, and resources basically equals money, right? But no longer is it like, and actually the last year has been brilliant, right? Because it has just totally democratized access to capital for everyone, right? Yeah. Not just Northern Ireland, everyone globally, right? There's no need to be like on planes all the time and do that stuff. And now investors are more open to that stuff. So you're seeing much more dialogue. You're seeing a normalization of prices. So like for companies and investments and stuff across, you know, ecosystems. And whereas, you know, historically, you know, Northern Irish companies would perhaps have been seen like a bargain to external investors. It's not the case anymore, right? Because we're all competing on the same playing field, which is brilliant, right? Which is very great. Good. And now we're starting to see much more significant investment coming in from outside Northern Ireland, which makes it more competitive for local investors too, which is, you know, they'll tell you it's bad, I'll tell you it's good, and we'll have a discussion about it. But, but it's great. Like, it's just starting to... You're just starting to see the shoots of this stuff now. And we're running the accelerator at the moment, and it's all fully remotely. And we've been, they've just had sessions with mentors in the US. So like the 10 teams have had, I don't know, there's been 40 or 50 different people, mentors and investors in the US.
Yeah, and you imagine trying to do that in the pre-COVID world, like trying to fly people over, trying to budget.
So we did, right?
Yeah.
We did it. We took them to San Francisco last year. But like now, and they maybe get to see a dozen, right?
Yeah.
Now they can see 50 or 60 or 70 people. But like the feedback we get from the sort of the investors, the mentors, and the founders in the US are like, what is going on in Northern Ireland? The talent is incredible. The companies are amazing. Where did you find them all from? We've got another 900 of these people.
You know? If you want to open up another 40 slots, be my guest.
But it's really interesting. Like, it's just really interesting that the caliber and the quality of people is higher than it's ever been and that I remember.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hear that and I totally agree with that. I also know that you're someone who, I don't know, for lack of a better term, is also very practical and pragmatic about where we are at and where our ecosystem is at. And, you know, I fall into the camp of, it's all great. It's all positive. We're world leaders in everything.
Yeah.
What's that niche martial arts? Yeah. We're world leaders in that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a bit of overly optimistic, let's say.
Yep.
In some circles. A lot of circles are ridiculously pessimistic. But what are some of the areas that you think we should be focusing on or we could be doing much better in?
Yeah.
In terms of your space.
I think I'm not going. There's some places I'm not going. I think that's kind of interesting because, like, we should never lose sight of the fact that we're a small country, right?
Yeah.
There's not that many people here.
Yeah.
So tiny. Like, we can't excel in everything, and we shouldn't.
Yeah.
But we also, at the moment, like on a global sort of stage, don't differentiate ourselves in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of the time, we'll hear like, yes, Belfast is the fintech capital of X or the cyber capital of Y. Yeah. And actually, like, if I go to, you know, which I've just been recently talking to sort of the government of the northeast of England, they're saying exactly the same thing. And sure. I'm like, hang on a minute. It's like, this is not right.
Do we all have gold medals? Wait, yes. What happened?
But it's also, it's a little disingenuous, right? But it feels like there's an important message that's just not getting through from here. It's like, what is our differentiation? Mm-hmm. If we're going to make Belfast like a proper player, and there's no reason why, or Belfast, Northern Ireland, a proper player, mm-hmm. there's no reason we can't, right?
Yeah.
It's like, but we have to get the message right. What is our differentiating factor in there? Mm-hmm. Right? It's not that we're going to be a centre of X, Y, and Z, or three or four or five different things. We can't, right? You can be one, right? And it's like, that's that, if that, right? But what we need is just more better skilled people, right? Mm. It's back to, like, Richard Florida does some, I really like his work on, like, the creative class, and it's too, so good, right? So it's like, and I think that's how we need to think about things. Mm. It's like, okay, we need to focus on that creative class. We need to make Belfast a nice place, which it is now. Like, it's fantastic. There's a reason I'm here and not somewhere else when I moved here 15 years ago. I really like it. But we need to advertise that as Northern Ireland, right? And it's a great place to come. It's a great place to raise a family. It's like, we've got everything we need in here. Mm-hmm. And we need that as our marketing message.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, then you attract, like, a really, like, you'll attract people back who are from here, mm-hmm. but you'll attract everyone else to here. Like, we're seeing founders now who are, like, saying, what's going on in Northern Ireland? We should maybe move there, right?
And that's, like, the thing. I think in a, if I can dare even utter this phrase, a post-COVID world, people are really starting to take stock of, where do I want to live? I can live anywhere.
Yeah.
I can work for any company around the world, but where I want to live is now solely up to me. I can do it remotely on my laptop. So actually, I'm more interested in, what's my quality of life? What's my cost of living? Mm. What's the cool hipster coffee scene in this city? And totally. Am I interested? Do I want to be a part of it? So yeah, I think you're right.
And we have a lot going in our favor, right? Like, I think that word creativity is something super important. Mm-hmm. I think we have... And it's one thing I'm a little disappointed about at the minute. It's like, we've had a lot of, like, creative input into Northern Ireland in the last decade, like the rise of the studios, like all of the stuff starting to get filmed here. And I haven't quite seen the spillover of that yet.
Yeah.
Like, I was kind of hoping that was going to lead into stuff. Like, I'd love to see 20 companies in here that were kind of came on the back of that stuff.
Totally.
Like, they're kind of just like, and we just don't have that. So there's something there that's not quite right in the jigsaw.
Yeah, because there was that sense of momentum, and then there's almost like, oh, Game of Thrones is finished.
Yeah.
Fizzle.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, the back of that, and you kind of, you hear a lot of people complaining about the gentrification of cities, right? Like, and generally, I think it's mostly a good thing, right, when that happens, because it shows that the standard of living is going up across the country. And Belfast has, you know, started to see the signs of that stuff while still not losing its sort of harder side in a nice way, right? Because I think that's what makes the city. But, like, we need to kind of put that front and centre, and that's what it's about, and that attracts people, and that attracts creatives, and that then just drives everything.
It
becomes less about, like, we're the centre of this and that and the other, and it's like, this is just a great place to
play
go
your
and
strengths.
Live. Exactly, yeah. And it's like, I think, make that your differentiation, right? Make that the thing that you want to do.
That's a good theory. I like that. I like that a lot.
And so anyway, that's just kind of how I've been thinking about it.
Cool. Talk to me about a few of the companies that have come through here, just to give people a bit of a flavour. I mean, I know it's like trying to pick your favourite kid, but
I'm wondering who I should call on, right? Like, just like, I'm going to set some sort of KPIs for them, right? So they have to do it now. I'm going to joke. Do you know, I was talking to, just you were saying, like, you can live and work from anywhere, and, like, we have a company called Medall, who kind of are set up by an ex-surgeon, actually, who's, like, building a new education system for healthcare worldwide, effectively, and community around it. It's a really, really interesting guy. But he'll kill me if I don't mention that, like, the Causeway Coast was, like, voted yesterday as the second best place in, like, the world to open a remote office in, right?
Unbelievable.
So... But yeah, we've got, I mean, like, there's tons of good companies. Like, it's hard to single out some people, but, like, there's been a definite, we see peaks in different themes. And in the last sort of year to 18 months, we're starting to see a real healthcare theme for some reason. Like, you know, 2 years ago, it was, like, sports tech and, like, construction and that stuff. But this year, and there's sort of two or three really strong companies coming through in there. You know, a couple of doctors who have kind of stopped being doctors and started companies.
Don't tell their grannies.
Because they think, exactly, what do you do now? Oh, it's the sort of, no. But because they think that actually, like, building a technology business is going to have a bigger impact on healthcare than being a doctor. They can affect more patients by doing this than by actually being a doctor, which is really interesting, right?
It takes us back to you and your partner building a system that, you know, ran parts of the NHS. The levers are very long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ad tech, I suppose, as well.
That's totally true. That's totally true. And so, like, kind of Aulus Medical, you know, Declan and Kelly there is the founder, and like they're kind of doing some really interesting stuff, and like ultimately want to build. So he's a doctor that taught himself how to code, and like and then did the stuff, and he wants to build like effectively like an artificial intelligence that's going to aid clinical decision making. So not replacing doctors, but augmenting their decisions, so they make smarter, better decisions based on data. Right.
Awesome.
Really cool. Like, just like. And these guys are just all at the start of this stuff. So, yeah. As I said, we don't know if this is going to work out, but he's great. Team's great. Really interesting company. And like Phil from Medall, I said, who's been brilliant. And like, I'm really excited for those two guys. And then Alan Kennedy from Pulse AI, who's like got a PhD in what he's working in, but very, very, you know, very knowledgeable. He actually spun out of a previous company that had been venture funded, so he kind of has a really good understanding of the what he needs to do to make this succeed. And I'm pretty optimistic that he's going to turn into something from that as well.
Very cool.
That's kind of three from the accelerator this year. That's just accelerator that's companies.
Just this year, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting.
Awesome. Well, I always land the plane with a few kind of stock questions for some sense of continuity in this very free-flowing show. And what we go for first? Go for this one first because it's the hardest one. And this is a question I love asking every person that I chat to. What would you, because you'll see why, what would you describe as your most successful moment?
It's a good question. My most successful moment was probably was like meeting Jess, my wife. Like, that was definitely the most successful thing I've done, right? Because that enables everything else. Like, yeah. A good choice then. She keeps me real. Yeah. Everything else is, yeah, bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. Domino's Pizza, man. You must have been a good charmer.
Free pizza.
Oh, man, that's it. That's the best.
Free
that's
pizza. She keeps she keeps telling me that, like, I knew you were a pizza boy. Yeah, no, that was, yeah, but that, like, I'm professionally, like, you know, that's definitely my, but my most successful professionally was like, I think getting my first customer, that just felt great, right? Like, it was something from nothing. That wasn't my dad, right? Like, the first real customer that actually sent me. And actually, back then, they sent us a check, right? Because they couldn't.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So that was like 10, 12 years ago, something like that. But they sent us a check for payment. And I've still got a picture of that first check with it, beside a champagne bottle.
Legend.
Yeah.
Absolutely legendary. Most challenging moment so far?
Oh, that's definitely bringing up three children.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, it's
I don't think that we just had our first. I don't think people talk about that enough.
Agreed. Yeah,
You know, you're sold the rose tint.
Oh yeah, oh, it's great.
And the rose tint exists
totally,
but it's not really the only thing that exists.
No, yeah. I mean, you know, and I think a lot of people have struggled in the last year with this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I have three kids, and it is really hard, right? Because kids are the best negotiators in the world, right? It's like, you know, and I get beaten every day. But that's like, when you talk about like most challenging or best or that stuff, like nearly all of that stuff comes back to personal for me, and that's all. And I put a premium on that ahead of everything else, and it's probably one of the reasons why I haven't actually started another company just yet. Is like. When you start something, it's all encompassing.
Yeah, it is.
And like, you should talk about it in a way it's like, it's not, you know, you're not working 14 hour days, you're not doing this stuff, but you are.
Yeah.
Because you can't help it.
Sure.
And like, the reason I didn't start something else straight away was because I've got three young kids. Yeah. And actually, it's been really nice to not be so under pressure like it was before and just spend time with them and do that stuff. But it makes it super challenging, right? They're really hard. Yeah. Like, you know, put your clothes on. No, right? Like, and like, get them dressed this morning and like leave the room and come back and they're all naked. It's like, you know, what's going on, right? You know, we're going in 3 minutes. That's it. That's the most challenging thing for sure.
Have you ever read The Second Mountain?
No.
The general gist of it is the first mountain is getting your kids up.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, after they've flown the nest, then you have the chance to climb the second mountain in your life, which is whatever's after that. And I think we maybe get things out of order a little bit, where we think we can do it all right now in this season of our lives, instead of being like, actually, there's time and a place, and now is not the time or the place.
Totally. You know? Yeah. I do feel like the early years are also the hardest, right? They're the most dependent. They're like, you know, you can't turn around, and otherwise they're standing on a table, like with a knife. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, what, how did that happen? But but like, there gets a point where it becomes easier, right? Yeah. And they start to get a bit more. Mine are kind of 7, 5, and 1, right? So it's like, and once they get to the kind of 7 and 5, they're great. Like, they're kind of they're starting to get their independence and do a bit more, and it's like they don't need just as much, and like, then it becomes easier and more challenging in a different way.
There's an Oliver Jeffers book, I think it's called Here We Are, and it's such a small little detail, but you know, it's like nice kind of little like bedtime sort of thing, you know. And then, you know, everyone sleeps at nighttime. And then if you look closely in the corner of the picture, the baby's in the crib standing up holding a hammer. And every time I read I'm like, it is so funny. It just tickles something in me. I'm like, that is so perfect.
Yeah.
If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland out for a coffee or out for a pint, dead or alive, who would you take?
Brian Arthur.
Oh, mate, give us your Brian Arthur speed.
I love Brian Arthur. He's really, really, like, he's not very well known in Northern Ireland, right? Yeah. So he did his degree in mechanical engineering, engineering at Queen's, then moved to the US. But he wrote quite a lot of papers, was not well regarded by the sort of economics profession, so he became an economist, not regarded, and then wrote this paper on something called increasing returns, which is basically went against all of classical economics. It now underpins most of the business models on the internet, right? And he has become like legendary in like Silicon Valley, San Francisco, startup circles. He talks of this stuff. I'm pretty sure he's one of the founding members of the Santa Fe Institute out there, like real multidisciplinary thinking. And like, I don't think anyone in Northern Ireland knows who he is, right? And it's like, he's, I'd love to go for a walk on the beach with him and ask him 50 questions, right? Like, he's just a super interesting guy.
So cool. Love that. Final question then, and it's a question that we always land on, and it's the classic, you know, Back to the Future. If you could go back to, say, like an 18-year-old Ian. No. If you could sit beside Ian on the train in Cuba and you had a couple of minutes of Ian's time, and there's no weird time travel stuff, so, you know, there's no paradoxes, you know, the world's not going to discombobulate if you interact with yourself, but you just had a couple of minutes, what would you say to him?
At that age, apply yourself.
You sound like your father.
Like, totally true, there, right? Like, so, my mom always called me Peter Pan, right? Like, because I'd never grow up, right? And that's she called me. I think at that point, it's like, oh, man, I could have done this stuff like 10 years earlier. All right, yeah, apply yourself, right? Totally true. Because I probably didn't take advantage of my early life the way I should have done. But I built it a different way. So I don't regret it in any way whatsoever. It's like, you know, it's just different. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, Ian, thank you so much for your time. It's been a blast. And I really enjoyed even getting to hear a bit of your story. It's very, very interesting. And I appreciate you giving up your time to do this.
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it.
Hi, everyone. I'm Claire Dowd, GM of Ormo Baths, a tech hub and co-working facility based in the historic Victorian bathhouse in the heart of Belfast city centre. Back in the good old days, Best of Belfast was my commute entertainment. Listening to the inspiring stories of Northern Irish people following their dreams and making magic happen was a great start or end to my day. Now that I've been working from home, I've kept up the same routine, and it's a great way for me to continue to brighten my days. My favourite episode, well, it has to be from one of our dear members of our Ormo Baths community, Mr. Mark Todd. It was really inspiring, and it just made me feel very peaceful, at rest, and happy knowing that there's excellent people doing excellent things within Northern Ireland. It is our delight and our pleasure to have Best of Belfast based out of the Ormo Baths, and we're excited about what's coming next. So, If you've been on the fence about joining the Producers Club and would miss Best of Belfast if it wasn't here, I'd highly recommend you joining today. Pop on over to bestofbelfast.org and I look forward to seeing you in our WhatsApp group very soon.